welcome to a very special edition of Dimes and Dozens, because we are once again joined by an incredible esteemed guest who we will be revealing later. Before we get to that, obviously there's been some like trade talk this week. There's, you know, we're going to talk about Blake Griffin going to the Nets. We're going to talk about where Andre Drummond's going to end up. But before we get to that, we skipped last week, so we didn't get a chance to talk about this. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the whole Myers-Leonard situation, because, you know, if there's anything me and Tolliver love to do, it is talk about racism.
We love it. That's why you're here.
That's why you're here. You're here for the jokes, and you're here to watch me get on my soapbox and about racism. And because it's just great, entertaining content, right? Who doesn't love listening to the most depressing shit in the world? Who doesn't love to just wake up on a Monday morning and listen to someone rail on about institutional racism?
It's called balance, you know, and we all need it.
Delicate balance.
We all need balance in our lives.
So in case you have been, in case you for some reason like listening to a basketball podcast but don't know what happened with Myers-Leonard last week, I don't know who that would be exactly, besides maybe my mom, I guess. But just in case, just a quick recap. Myers-Leonard, who you might know from playing for the Miami Heat but barely getting any minutes. You might know him from selling workout shakes on Instagram. You might know him for refusing to kneel for the national anthem in solidarity with his black teammates in the bubble, and then giving some diatribe afterwards about how it's out of respect for the military, because we all know that kneeling for the national anthem is a big fuck you, soldiers.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're trying to say.
That's the whole point. Definitely has nothing to do with police brutality or just systemic oppression of black people in this country, and everything to do with just saying, I don't give a fuck about soldiers.
Absolutely.
So you might know him from those things, but now he's known and will forever be known as the guy who said a very deep cut anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic slur on his own Twitch stream.
Yeah.
So just to reiterate, he broadcasted this.
Yeah.
Of his own volition. It's not like he got caught on like a security cam or something. He was streaming on Twitch by choice. And what had happened was he was angry at one of the other people he was playing with. And you see him pause on the video and take a moment, take a breath, almost say the N-word is what I believe happened.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Almost say the N-word and then go, oop. No, I'm going to get in trouble for that. Go through the Rolodex of racist slurs in his own mind and land on the K word, which is like an incredibly deep cut. I heard someone say, I forget whose podcast this was on, but I heard someone say, it was, or maybe it was on Twitter, this is like not an album cut racial slur. Mm-hmm. This is like a B-side racial slur. This is like an old man who's like, maybe Hitler had something, had a point slur that is like not used in common vernacular anymore.
Yeah.
And I will add that there, before I tell you guys what happens next, let you already know, I will add that there's 0% chance that anyone could even know this word without knowing that it's an anti-Jewish slur.
Oh, yes, right.
Because the only way you learn it is if you know what it means.
Yeah, it's,
You know, he said it, and then you watch him in real time sort of realize that it's his wife. He's like, my wife's texting me, I gotta go, ends the stream, realizes that people have seen him say this and that he's in trouble. And then subsequently, you know, the NBA released a statement that they were going to be evaluating. They're going to be, you know,
investigating.
Don't really know how much there is to investigate. He was streaming on live Twitch saying racial slurs, but neither here nor there. And then they ended up settling on the maximum that you can fine someone via the Players Association, CBA, like the most you can fine someone is $50,000. Mind you, they throw the book at everyone for every offense. That's what they fined Draymond for, saying that Devin Booker should get out of Phoenix when he was on Inside the NBA. Famously. They fined him $50,000 and suspended him for a week, but they couldn't suspend him without pay because he was already injured. And it makes sense, actually, that you can't suspend an injured player without pay, because then they could just find some weird excuse for every injured player and be like, you did something wrong, and then not have to pay people when they're injured. So that part does make sense. But only a week he got suspended. Definitely could have done something longer than that.
Forever.
I assume or forever, just tell him to go fuck himself. He's on a 2-year deal with the Miami Heat. The second deal is a team option, meaning they have, they're not beholden to him in any way for next year. And for this year, he's already injured, and it's like a $10 million, I think, that he's getting paid for the year. But they could definitely have just, you know, taken the L on that, on that contract for the year and just said, we don't want you in our locker room.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they haven't yet. I don't, even though the Miami Heat have a Jewish owner, I don't know if it's because I heard someone talking about how they could potentially, if they're trying to get like a Bradley Beal or someone like that to make the dollars and cents work out, they could need his contract to like make a trade happen. And then the next team would obviously like could just waive him immediately, and it would just be to make the dollars and cents work. I don't really know. I don't really care. I feel like there's just a certain point where it's like you just got to make a statement.
And, yeah, you can't play in this league anymore.
And say unequivocally, you're not welcome here. People who say things like this are not welcome here. And just sort of draw a line in the sand regardless of the financial inconvenience or whatever. And at this point, it's now been, you know, probably almost a week since it happened. And every day that goes by that he doesn't have a more severe punishment is like a tacit endorsement of this kind of behavior.
Yeah.
But the one thing, so that's like the recap, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I did want to talk about, because I think we all can agree, it's really, really bad to say slurs. I think we all can agree that that slur is like especially atrocious because it just like doesn't exist in common vernacular. And the only way you know it is if you're a real deal capital B bigot.
Yes, absolutely.
And also, like, I think we can agree as reasonable people that the excuse that he gave that he didn't know what it meant is bullshit. His excuse was fucking ridiculous. He was just like, oh, I didn't know what the word meant, and, you know, sorry and shit, basically, is the long and short of what he said. But also, I think we can agree, you don't say slurs like that, especially on your own Twitch stream, if they're not a regular part of your vernacular. They don't just come out of nowhere. You don't just suddenly summon from the ether, like via like some weird light tube down from the sky into your brain. I've never said this word in my life. I just happened to say it on the stream. Like, definitely he's a bigot who says things like this all the time. I feel like that stuff's boring to talk about. It's really obvious. He's obviously a fucking asshole. Like, I don't really have any interest in extrapolating on that. But there is a sticking point for me that I wanted to talk about, which is, there's been several people, both, and I, you know, I'm Jewish on my mom's side, but there's been several people both in the Jewish community and elsewhere who have said something to the effect of, listen, I'm not talking about him kneeling for the anthem. That's neither here nor there. This is what we're talking about. And I just really wanted to address that because I didn't hear that many people talking about sort of the sort of depressingness, I guess, of that statement, because it is here and there. It's exactly where we are, is right here, which is that there was a red flag that this man was, you know, prejudiced in some way or ignorant to the point of, and I feel like ignorance too, like as an excuse, like he's not racist, he's just ignorant.
Right.
Ignorance is racist.
Yeah.
Because if you are 30 years old, as this man is, and you've not taken upon yourself at any place in your life working in a league of predominantly black men to educate yourself about the struggles of people outside your race and outside your background, then you don't value their lives enough to educate yourself about them. And that is inherently in and of itself racist. So to me, the ignorance excuse means nothing. But also, just like, that was not, that did not exist in a vacuum, refusing to kneel for the anthem. That is absolutely an indication of who this person is.
Yeah.
And we should have taken it as like a league more seriously at the time. And this is just an underscore of what that means. And to say that like racism and like bigotry and anti-Semitism, these things don't exist in a vacuum. Like predominantly the people who hold these sentiments hold them for everyone who's not like the fucking Aryan race. Right.
Yeah.
And as like a Jewish person, you know, if it should upset me and to the same degree to watch him, and it did, to watch him refuse to kneel for the anthem, as it does to hear him say this very violent, very attacking word against like my people. And they're not independent of each other whatsoever. And And I think it's really dangerous thinking to try and compartmentalize them.
It's also kind of interesting because, you know, this country's civil rights history, a lot of it is like Black people and Jewish people coming together.
Right.
And so this is sort of this like this really weird perfect storm, or like the opposite of perfect storm or whatever, of I guess Myers-Leonard, you know, attacking what I've seen like to be like a coalition. Like
right.
this coalition of people who are like typically seeking justice, who have been wronged historically.
Mm-hmm.
And then the worst part of it always, or one of the worst parts of it always for me, is like just the glibness of everybody and like how right. flippant everybody is about it. I saw, you know, one thing I saw over and over and over again was it's Call of Duty. And
oh
I'm like, what sort of like weird universe do you all live in where that makes any
where it's
sense?
Okay to call someone.
What?
Also, like, maybe it is really common and rampant on these Twitch streams to say incredibly offensive racial slurs. That's more of an indictment
exactly.
on the streams than it is an exoneration of yeah. his behavior. Like, okay, cool. So all of you motherfuckers are guilty then.
Exactly.
They're great. Glad we can address that.
But it's a game. It's a game. That's where we get to say the slurs.
It's a game.
Like,
that's where we call people.
You said the quiet part
racist.
Out loud. You said right. the quiet part out loud.
Out
you
know? The fuck loud.
You know?
The person who I heard articulate this the best was actually Dan Le Batard. On his show, they were talking about this, and Stu Gatz, his co-host, is Jewish, and he was saying, you know, like, he didn't say so much like, the kneeling thing is neither here nor there, but he was sort of saying this one was really personal for me because like as a Jewish person, like I feel scared when I go to synagogue and stuff. And like this is like very personal. And he was telling Dan, like, you can't relate to this because you're not Jewish. And Dan was saying, and so then Stu Gatz was saying that he feels like if he had said that, this is his what he was saying. I don't feel this way. I just want to make that clear. But he was saying if it had been the N-word, he would have been waived immediately. And the fact that it was an anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic right. slur, he thought that was more lenient and that people don't take that as seriously. And he said he was just looking for consistency and parity in the way that we punish people. And I immediately was like knee-jerk reaction, like, I fucking don't you dare bring the N-word into this as right. like a white person was like my first reaction. But then Dan Le Batard's, the way he responded, I thought was so eloquent and so well put, was he was saying, you know, this is obviously so personal for you and in ways that I can't possibly understand or like relate to, but I am attempting to try. But if you're looking, I would say to you that if you're looking for consistency, as far as like if you're going to bring up the N-word and say you're looking for consistency with that, and like, then you need to feel the hurt that you felt when he levied this word against you, when the injustice is being directed at Black people, then feel that same hurt for them.
Yeah.
If you're talking about consistency, be consistent.
Absolutely.
Then feel that same pain and feel that same hurt when they're being the target of racism and bigotry as you do then when it's levied against you. And to me, that's like the best way you could possibly explain it is like, the whole definition of empathy, right, and being an empathetic person is that even if this shit never ends up on your front door, it should still hurt you to your core to watch someone be treated unequally based on their race or based on their religion or based on their sexual orientation. Like, this should penetrate and hurt you as a person if you're just a thinking, feeling person with a heart. And it shouldn't matter if it's the K word or the N word or whatever else.
Yeah.
It should hurt. And it hurt me to watch him not kneel with his teammates. And even though I know that as a white woman, there could easily never come a day when I have an interaction with a police officer where I feel scared for my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could go my whole fucking life and never have that happen. And it does not change how much it hurts to know that there is an entire segment of the population for which that's not true.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with if it's going to directly affect me, and it shouldn't have anything to do with if it directly affects you.
Yeah.
And I think that to me is sort of the thing that this whole Myers-Leonard situation has shown a light on for me, is there's a lot of people for whom until it's about them, they don't care and they can't care on any meaningful level. And to me, that is really scary.
Yeah, I think there's like, before I started to say this, I was going to say it was an American thing, but I think it's, you know, it's just a human thing, tribalism, right? Almost like you said, like, if it's not happening to me or my people, like, whatever. And then like, just to, you know, just to make it kind of macro, it's like, you know, we're seeing like a rise in like violence against Asian Americans, and like, you know, how many posts have we seen from you know, our friends who are like, yo, please stop ignoring that this is happening. Like, right. literally, this is like a 300% spike in people attacking us and shit like that.
Right.
And so it's like, I guess I say all that to say that I really worry about us. Obviously, I was always, you know, mm-hmm. kind of worried about where we're going in this country. But like, I feel like those sort of like chasms, like we haven't even begun to cross. We have like,
right.
it's like you said, like saying the N word is like completely separate in people's minds from saying the K word or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it all of it is like violent. You know what I'm saying? Right. And even for the people who are in the Twitch stream who are saying shit like this, like it's even violent to them. Like they don't even realize, I guess, the psychic damage they're doing to themselves. Right. And Toni Morrison had some quote. I always watch this video of her and Charlie Rose where she talks. She's like, racism is a profound neurosis. Like, it's an aberration. It is like deleterious is the word she uses. To you.
Go, Toni. I love how much smarter she is than me.
Exactly. She's like, it has a deleterious effect on, just as she said, just as much on the person who is saying the racist thing as it does right. on the person who is receiving it. It's like it's an illness.
Because they're eroding their own ability to relate to other human beings exactly. on a fundamental level. And like, they're robbing themselves of one of the most beautiful fundamental things about being human, which is to recognize that humanity in another person.
Exactly. And, you know, and I mean, just piggybacking on what you just said, that's like one of the joys. That's like one of the best parts
of being alive. Here. That's yeah. what being a musician is. That's why both you and I are professional musicians, is because we found a way to connect to other human beings on a fundamental level and to use our own humanity to make other humans feel recognized and understood and seen. And that's art, that's life, that's love, that's everything. And racism is like a direct threat to that, and all bigotry is a direct threat to that. And we should see it as an emergency, regardless yeah. of whether or not it's happening to us directly. Like, that is a threat to everything that makes life worth living. Yeah. Period. End of story.
And a lot of that, I mean, it's tough, but like a lot of that healing, or like the process, I think, has to begin with punitive action. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
With, you know, people realizing that there are consequences and that they actually did hurt people. It's not
beyond just being paid for a week to stay home yeah. from the bench and yeah. to be at your house instead. You need to draw a line in the sand and say, we absolutely do not, unequivocally do not tolerate this under any circumstances. And I mean, and to me, I'm like, God, if you can't do that to Myers Leonard, who's at the tail end of his career. Stop. Not contributing. I'm just going to shit on this man.
Yeah, yeah.
Not contributing in any meaningful way to this team. Doesn't have a backbreaking salary.
Mm-hmm.
Next year is a team option. If you can't do it in this moment, when are you going to lay the hammer down? Because you know, if it was fucking like Jimmy Butler who said some, you know, epithet and on a stream, they would have no choice but to keep them, or they would feel that way because right. he's their star. So here's, you know, you got a gimme. You got a fucking yeah. layup. To make a statement about bigotry, and they fumbled it,
yeah.
you know, and I think that's really too bad. And I'm sure that there will be more. I'm sure this isn't the last we're going to hear from them on it, you know, and I'm sure there'll be more. But to me, like I said, it's weakened. The statement is weakened with every day that passes by that they don't do something drastic.
Yeah. Knowing that they're like thinking about it is bad. You know, it's not great. Like,
right. Oh. What's there to think about?
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
We're all gonna miss horrified. Myers Leonard. Oh my God. What do we do without him?
But I will say that he's like lost all his sponsorships and stuff like that.
Shouldn't have had him to begin with, but yeah.
Why did you have sponsorships when you refused to kneel for the national anthem, sir?
Yeah. Shame on those
like,
people.
Like, fuck Coors Forever. Coors like paid for him to go on like a road trip with his wife and like an RV emblazoned with the Coors logo all summer, like immediately. You know what I mean? It's just like, let's cut the shit, because none of you guys actually care until it affects your bottom line.
Those Rocky Mountains, they're cold.
Anyway, it feels really good to get that off my chest. This podcast is like half therapy for me sometimes, and it's really nice after we had last week off to have an opportunity to just talk about how horrifying this whole situation was. So
absolutely
appreciate that. We'll just talk shop for just a minute before we bring on our guest. Blake Griffin ended up going to the Nets. So yeah. they're assuming their starting lineup for the playoffs is going to be healthy Kevin Durant, healthy Kyrie Irving, healthy James Harden, and in theory, healthy Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
That's pretty scary. Not yeah. going to lie. Like, if that gels, that's historic.
I've been holding out hope that, you know, I'm like, the Lakers are going to are going to go back to back on this. And just like, I've just been blindly saying that to myself, like, no,
yeah,
it's going to happen. And then more things fall, like work in the Nets' favor, more things right. start to work. They start to look better.
And the Lakers still aren't quite gelling and yeah. like injuries keep stacking up. I'm and
like, no, it's going to be fine. That's like how I approach my music career. You're like, okay, that didn't work out, but it's coming, you know?
It's fine. I'm well into my 30s now, but I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm in my mid-30s. It's totally fine. That's when it's a fine. Lot, you know.
It could happen tomorrow.
What's that? Olivia Rodrigo has a number one hit at 17? That doesn't bother me.
What? I could probably be her mother, on depending on what my upbringing was like.
Oh, I don't know okay. what you're talking about. Yeah, so yeah. I'm praying the Lakers get Andre Drummond so that I can at least feel like they made like a counter move.
Right.
And I don't know. Shame on Wes Matthews.
Shame upon his family.
Shame on you. I had such
I mean, it's just scary because like Caruso's out now with concussion protocol after the OG protocol. Before we had health and safety protocol, it was just concussion protocol.
Yeah.
Shout out. He's out with concussion protocol because he fell really hard on his head the other night.
Yeah.
And then you've got Marc Gasol out for a little while with the COVID side, health and safety protocol. And then Anthony Davis is probably going to be out. He should be out until like basically the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're missing, you know, we talked about in previous weeks, they're missing like a kind of gritty big man. Now they also seem to be missing, especially with Caruso being out and Marc Gasol, who's like a really good playmaker, like somebody else to make plays and sort of handle. I mean, they've got Dennis Schroeder, of course, they've got LeBron, but they need another person who can like create their own shot, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. Damian Jones has been pretty good. But I wonder if they're going to sign like someone else to a 10-day or like what the plan is for that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of don't want them to, but I don't have a good reason why I don't want them to. I kind of feel like, I think it's that same thing I was talking about earlier. I'm like, don't panic. Don't make any rash moves. Everything's going to be
totally
fine.
That's probably smart, though.
Yeah. But I was seeing somebody talking about, you know, I was reading about it prior to this podcast, and they were like, well, they need to get another big, like Andre Drummond, or they need to get bigs or whatnot. But then, like, suddenly you have, like, this glut now at the 4 and the 5 because, mm-hmm. you know, you went out and you're like, okay, you know, we're panicking a little bit. It's not working out. And now you have this sort of crowded house of people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't fucking know. So like you were saying, the article I was reading was like, why don't we just go out and get like, you know, who's that short dude back in the day? Nate Robinson. Go out and get you a fucking Nate Robinson type to come in and get knocked out by a YouTuber.
I mean, it is like a delicate balance, right? Of like, you need the talent and you need the, you know, the guys on the floor, but you also, the chemistry is really the most important thing in some ways at the end of the day. And it's a little late in the game to be starting to develop that chemistry from scratch. So I don't know. I still feel on the like panic meter, I still feel like 75% confident in the Lakers, I would say.
Wait, did you see this thing where Kuz was like, LeBron was eye fucking me?
Oh no, he said he was eye fucking LeBron to get LeBron to give him the ball, which is incredible.
Fanfic.
I'm like all about like anything that's unintentionally homoerotic in sports. Like, I mean, that's very borderline intentionally homoerotic, but I love, you know, to combat this idea that, you know, sports are so homophobic, which they are to some degree.
Absolutely, yeah.
I love anytime something is like ever so slightly, even ever so slightly homoerotic, because I just feel like it's like, yes, hug.
Yeah. You you a second ago said they're missing a gritty big man in the middle. And I got to tell you, I got lost.
My favorite Twitter account is called Gentle Sports Touches. Do you follow them?
Please.
It's literally just photos. It's literally just, it's not as sexual as it sounds. It's not sexual at all. That's what's great about it. But it's literally just photos or GIFs or videos of like gentle embraces or like shows of affection between men in sports. And it's wonderful.
That's fantastic.
Speaking of gentle embraces and just, no, that's not a good segue. Okay, so we're finally going to let our guests out of our basement green room dungeon where we keep all of our guests. This week's guest is so exciting because he's one of my dear friends. And he's also, I was telling Tolliver, he's also the kindest person I think I've ever met. And I say the word kind versus the word nice because we all know nice people and they're not necessarily kind. But he is an extremely kind person. known across the internet for being kind. In fact, with his pep talks that he gives, he's an executive producer and writer on Jesus and Miro. He does stand-up comedy. He has a book called Nice Try out now wherever you get books. He's just an all-around amazing human. Josh Gondelman is here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Yay. It's so great to be here.
So excited to have you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that immensely kind and lovely intro.
Oh,
I feel like I'm really going to have to... I've got to really make sure that all pops in the podcast appearance.
Absolutely. It's true. Yeah.
I thought it was so funny because, true to form, Josh, you sent me a photo before we were taping of your beverage that you're drinking right now. And obviously, this is not a visual podcast, but he is drinking a Dunkin' Donuts.
Well, you tweeted that you said hint for tomorrow's guest, Dunkin' Donuts. And I had just, I was out for a walk, and on my way home, I like pre-ordered, I have the Dunkin' app, of course.
Wow.
So I pre-ordered myself like an afternoon
incredible
treat, iced coffee.
Incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'm just outrageously consistent. I feel like I was born to be one of those cartoons that like has a closet full of the same outfit. And
it's all Dunkin' Donuts merch.
All Dunkin' Donuts merch. Just 17 Dunkin' Donuts identical t-shirts. I feel like I'm like consistent to the point of self-parody.
It's amazing. Well, we love a consistent man over here.
Truly.
But
thank you.
Yeah. So another thing you're pretty consistent about is you're from Boston originally, correct?
Yeah, grew
and
up
you
in
love,
the suburbs,
and
lived
you love
in the city.
Celtics.
Love
that's
the
your
Celtics.
Team. Mm-hmm. The one as Lakers fans, homers on this podcast.
Oh,
the one thing I can say about the Celtics is that it is a part of my family now, as my husband Jaylen Brown does play for the Celtics and has for the last few years. So I have a soft spot for the team, despite, you know, historical rivalries. It's a little bit of like a Romeo and Juliet situation between me and Jaylen.
Conflict. I love that.
You know, minus the poison.
Yeah,
you know, we'll just see. The love and the sort of tumult.
Yeah, Romeo and Juliet situation is like that's you're
Lakers,
really calling
Celtics.
It a,
I mean, you
a
know,
scary shot.
Yeah.
Tale as old as time, truly. But so as a Celtics fan, you know, there were high hopes this season for the Celtics. They seemed like they could have maybe come out of the East last year, barring a couple things going their way. Obviously, they sort of gave one of my least favorite players in the league, but that's neither here nor there. Gordon Hayward away for peanuts, or not even for peanuts, for nothing. They just let him walk.
Hey, they got a huge traded player exception or exemption. And so they now there's just been like intense, like real wonky trade talks. Like it's not even like the real fun kind of trades where it's like, ooh, if we give up this player to this team, we could get this player back and these draft picks. Now it's just like, okay, we don't have to make salaries match. And it's like, that's not like a selling point to fans of the game of basketball.
It is to me, but I realize I'm like not the average fan necessarily. And I have to remind myself of that sometimes. I'm like, oh damn, they don't have to make salaries match. That's crazy. Yeah. That's a game changer. But I did want to ask you, you know, again, sort of a little bit maybe underperformed at the beginning of the season. How are you feeling about them now? How are you feeling about them moving forward? But also, how are you feeling about the fact that apparently Marcus Smart is like the crux of this team? Like when he was out, they were terrible.
We know this. Celtics fans know that like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum are the emerging superstars. Kemba Walker is kind of the steady veteran who's maybe not quite at the superstar level that he was, and they don't need him to be, right? I don't think to be a good team. Marcus Smart, the players and the coaches say it, that he's the heart of the team. He is an absolute maniac on defense who just wants to take the ball away from people in humiliating ways. And someone posted because it was his birthday last week, someone posted like a 15 second clip it might have been the Nets a couple years ago, but them doing the thing where you roll the ball up the court so that the clock doesn't start right on an out of bounds after
the
basket.
Oh yeah, that's so disrespectful.
So disrespectful.
And Smart, I've never seen this before. Marcus Smart dove on the ball and stole it. Which I feel like that just is like
that
is
him.
Such a move of like, don't disrespect me. It reminded me of like when when KG used to swat shots that were taken after a whistle. You know, yes, how the players will just like take a rhythm shot after the whistle, and Garnett would just swat him out of the hoop and goaltend it. Yeah. And this is what that reminded me of, where it's just like, I don't want anyone thinking they can get one over on me. I love Marcus Smart. I have a giant Marcus Smart jersey hanging up.
I was
going
to say tattoo,
office.
And I was about to be like, no. Fucking blown.
I got a Marcus Smart jersey, and it hangs up above my desk at work, and there's footage from an episode of Jesus and Mero of the kid Mero trying to set it on fire.
I was gonna say that's a pretty contentious place to hang a Celtics jersey.
It's very
contentious. Clearly Knicks territory. Anyone who's ever listened to their podcast or watched this wonderful esteemed television show that Josh executive produces and writes knows that they're enormous Knicks fans.
Huge Knicks fans.
Yeah, like diehard.
But what you've got to understand about me is I'm a real piece of garbage. So I'm going to put up my Marcus Smart jersey and I'm going to yell at them. It's very fun. There's a lot of fun back and forth at the office about it, which I like. I enjoy that. That's like a fun part of being a sports fan.
Yeah. Have you ever pranked them? Like, you don't seem like necessarily, you don't strike me as a huge prankster, but I could be wrong. Have you ever pranked them back and like tried to sabotage any of they are your bosses. So I guess it's a slightly different dynamic, but
the closest I've come to that is I was on the panel for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me this past weekend, and they were the celebrity guests, which is very fun and funny. And we got into a loud, like, in fun argument. I don't think it made it to the show over whether Johnny Damon, who's recently been in trouble and is like a big Trump supporter, whether Johnny Damon belongs to the Red Sox or the Yankees. And so we were both like loudly disowning Johnny Damon on the radio.
The radio.
I think Red Sox, for sure.
Yankees
touched it last.
I think it's so funny that they're Yankees fans, like such diehard Yankees fans, because, and I mean, I realize this isn't like, you know, I understand like Yankees are like Bronx's own Yankees, right? So they're from the Bronx. I get it. But growing up in New York, at least, you know, in the 90s when I was growing up, the general consensus that I understood was that I grew up a Mets fan, full disclosure. The Mets were sort of like the underdog people's team, sort of like for impoverished, like born and bred New Yorkers. And the Yankees were like the Patriots or something, right? They were like the like can't be beat. I thought of like the Yankees being like the Upper East Side and the Mets being like Queens or some shit, you know?
It pains me to defend the Yankees in any capacity, but I will say, I think like the couple years difference in when you were growing up versus like when they were like kids, right? Like I think they're probably a couple years older
maybe
than
like
you are.
Two or three years
I
older,
think
yeah.
The difference of like early 90s Yankees versus late 90s Yankees is like a big difference. Plus, coming from the Bronx, I feel like you have to like I'm from New England. I have to like defend Tom Brady from Deflategate allegations. I can't not like the Patriots because they were good. That's like real self-defeatist thinking,
right? Yeah.
To
well,
be
that's
like,
how we feel.
Well, I can't
in
like
LA.
Them because they're a dynasty,
right? And living in LA, like that's how I feel. It feels strange to now live in a place where it's like the Dodgers and the Lakers and stuff because I'm not used to being from like being a fan of a team that wins. So it's very strange to me. It's like a strange phenomenon. I don't know like what to do exactly or how to behave.
Yeah. I'm from Chicago and it's you know, similar dynamics where I was like a Chicago White Sox fan. There's like seven of us total. And it was always like the trash team. Cause you know, they like burned all those disco records, people running on the field drunk and shit like that. But I had to stand tall for them cause the Cubs were like the evil empire. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It was like, they're the Yankees of Chicago.
For sure. But at least you must have had I don't know how old you are exactly, but like the Bulls of the 1990s was just like such a like beloved dynasty, right? Like I mean, other teams hated them, but like it wasn't controversial to be like the Chicago Bulls are possibly the greatest franchise in the history of sports, like this 8-year run they had.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, speaking of winning and pivoting slightly back to basketball, Josh, I know that you ride for the Celtics. I'm curious to see how far that goes. What are your we've asked the last few guests the same question. What are your finals predictions? Who do you think is going to be there, and who do you think is going to win it all? If you had to take a wager,
gosh, So I don't think in good conscience, like, I can honestly say the Celtics, like, this isn't me yelling at my bosses during a TV taping. This is like, we're talking like people listen to this because they want like real sincere opinions. Uh-huh. So I don't think the Celtics are going to come out of the East this year.
Okay.
Barring like some kind of big trade. I think they can get close. I think if Joel Embiid recovers from that bone bruise, right? Like, mm-hmm. it wasn't a bigger injury. He like yeah. landed on his knee hard. I think the Sixers. I think really? It's their. I do. I wow. think it's their year. I don't. I think a potential Kyle Lowry trade would swing.
That would
it.
Be a game changer.
Yeah.
And I think like it's no fun to pick the Nets.
Right.
And yet.
I mean, however. They're so good. I mean, they're such a dazzling offensive team.
Yeah.
But I think as much as I love the Celtics-Sixers rivalry of the past like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I think that's like been really fun. I think like one of my favorite recent basketball memories were the Sixers shooting off the confetti before the game ended in the playoffs like 3 years ago.
Oh my
and then
God.
The Celtics winning the game.
Yeah.
Loved that. Like just like a truly
so
like
petty.
a real strong petty sports feeling.
Yeah.
And I think like, but I can't root for Kyrie Irving's current team
yeah.
to make it to the finals.
Hey,
as much as I think he's an enjoyable player to watch. I love watching what yeah. he does with the ball. Can't root for him. James Harden like destroying the Houston Rockets.
They are like a team God. Of supervillains. It's really interesting. It's mm-hmm. like truly they make the Warriors look like the Warriors of yore, right? Not the current Warriors. Look
the Warriors,
like the Warriors as they're known. Oh my God,
yeah.
so good.
Yeah.
It's very bad. And
honestly, the good and bad is a circle, and if
you're
you go
right.
far enough in one direction, no, you just
yeah.
end up at the beginning.
Just a horseshoe theory of puns, I agree.
Right. but they make the Warriors look like protagonists because they're just so villainous, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, not only are they a super team, which in and of itself, it's really hard to overcome like being villains as a super team, but they're a super team of like the least like warm and fuzzy likable
yeah.
all-stars that I've ever been. It's like, it's crazy.
I kind of individual, like, I can't root for Kyrie, even though I
because of him, like, or because of the Celtics, or both?
Because of the Celtics. Because,
okay.
That's the only thing.
Okay.
Because gotcha. Of the way he left the Celtics.
Okay.
Otherwise, I have like no real other problem with him. I'm not like a Kyrie, like the individual things he does, I don't get,
the Kanye
like,
is strong
about.
In him. It is.
But, yeah.
But I don't, like, that doesn't rile me up as much as, okay. like, just the way he left the team. And, like, mm-hmm. I think kind of that last playoff series against Milwaukee 2 years ago kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. So I cannot root for his, like, especially on the next team. It's like when someone, like, people always use, like, relationship metaphors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like when someone dumps you in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I get a grace period of like, well, I hope they're not happy with the person they yeah, dumped
the
before.
Next relationship.
But like, even if they're happy in the future,
right.
yeah.
I would like this to be like a bad choice.
You need
with
like 2 to 3 years of misery for me to feel
yeah.
okay about it.
Even
yes.
even just like a bad fit, like bad move. I don't want them to be. I would never root for someone to be like mistreated, but I do root for like, whoops, bad move.
Yeah, I really you want them to miss you and regret leaving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want some regret. And so I cannot root for the Nets. And so even Philly, who I like have so much trouble rooting for, I do think this year I would love for Giannis to finally do
yeah.
it after all these super teams formed right. against, you know
yeah.
what I mean? After the Nets formed up against him, and like with Embiid playing, with Joel Embiid, frankly, being the player that Sixers fans have insisted he is for 5 years
yeah.
In vain. I would love.
No, that's true now.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And it's like, I can't be a Joel Embiid hater anymore because he is like backing up the thing that everybody has said about him and he said about himself.
Right.
But I do feel like you don't get like a 4 year ramp up to be like, wow, he was this good all along. He's this good now. Or at least like when he was like getting gassed in fourth quarters of playoff games, you'd be like, maybe he's not the guy yet. Like, that
yeah.
doesn't seem controversial.
Wasn't yeah. Joel Embiid was like injured for his first 2 seasons, right? Like,
yeah.
He's been pretty yeah. injury prone for
it,
sure.
It was insane. Yeah. I remember giving
and you
up
lost,
on him.
he lost Rookie of the Year, right? He was out for like a whole season, and then he didn't win Rookie of the Year because he only played like a small amount of games. He was mm-hmm. great in that first season, and then Malcolm Brogdon won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And so like I am like, okay, credit where credit's due.
Right.
I think the Sixers are really good. And it's like fun. If like he and Ben Simmons can coexist in like this really great way, that mm-hmm. will be like a fun, weird team to watch.
Totally. Yeah. So I know that it's not your conference of expertise talking about the West, but who do you mm-hmm. think is going to come out of the West then? Who's going to be with them?
I kind of feel like it's, I like don't believe the Clippers yet.
Mm-mm.
I just wonder why.
As great as I thought they were going to be, because I love Kawhi.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And I think Paul George is like a very good player, but like I just don't. They just haven't like looked like a championship team. That's right. Such like an old man thing to say. It's just like they don't look like they have the heart of a champion guy. But like
smell test.
Do you know?
Oh my god, we got a little snippet of Boston right there.
I've got amazing. Like that old man. There's like a little the sports radio where my heart should be.
Amazing.
But like I don't believe the Clippers. It's like the Lakers did it last year. If Anthony Davis is healthy, they're arguably better than they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be very fun to see the Jazz make a deep run, but like they're that kind of like high variance 3-point shooting offense that has like
very Rockets-esque.
Yes, right, that's exactly what their offense feels like to me. It's mm-hmm. like the Rockets, where like your one that game 7 where Chris Paul was hurt and they went like
one of the greatest moments in basketball history.
It's such a so good. But like that can just happen when that's your offense,
right?
And like unless you have like the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson mm-hmm. 3-point shooting, where it's like, well, that's
the greatest these shooter are essentially of all time, layups. And like one yeah, of the exactly. other greatest shooters of all time, right?
It's still I think that to me, that like trusting a team whose offense is based around that hasn't like borne out that many times. Like mm-hmm. the Lakers shot well in the playoffs last year, but they weren't like a lighted up 3-point shooting team.
No, they were awful right. from three yeah. for the most of last
yeah.
season.
God, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my question for you about the Jazz, because this is what I struggle with the Jazz. Who are you rooting for on the Jazz? And I know it's not about that. Like, that's not obviously what wins championships. But for me, as like a basketball fan, I'm like, who are you like emotionally attached to on that team? Because they're besides Mike Conley, I guess, is pretty, mm-hmm. you know, lovable.
One of the most lovable players absolutely. In the league. So likable.
Right. But so you've got Mike Conley. Is there anyone else that you're just like, God, I really want to see him get a ring?
I don't feel quite that strongly about like Donovan Mitchell, but I enjoy watching Donovan Mitchell. I thought that first round series last year with the Nuggets was great.
That was amazing. That was
just like
series.
So exciting. And I like enjoy watching Donovan Mitchell play like a little more than Jamal Murray, let's say, who is like mm-hmm. going kind of toe-to-toe with him there. But and I think we haven't talked about the Nuggets at all, who I don't quite.
That's because they're not like, going to win a championship.
I know, but they're so fun.
Jokic is one of my favorite players in the league.
Yeah,
he is like top 5 most lovable, would jump in front of a train for NBA players for me. Like, I just really, he is so pure. I'm like, protect that man at all costs.
I forget who wrote the profile a few years ago. I don't remember though. It was a Zach Lowe, but it was there was like a couple paragraphs that he lived in like a big house in Denver with his brothers who are bigger than him.
Oh my god.
And
god.
They all like wrestled still like as adult, like in adult men in their 20s would like roughhouse all the time.
How is that not a reality show?
So funny.
MTV, where are you?
Oh my god.
It's like so funny to me. I think about that all the time, and it like that's such like a fun detail. Just like he's like 7 feet tall and was like even larger as a man then than he is now, and he just said bigger brothers. It's like
that's incredible.
How? Was one of his parents a grizzly bear?
Yes. One of his parents is a grizzly bear, and the other was Boban's dad. They're actually related.
It's Boban's wow. dad.
Unknown fact.
That's
in
incredible.
The NBA. I want to point out that you evaded that question with incredible ease.
Oh, yeah. Who's
you
coming out of the West?
Donovan Mitchell. Yeah.
No.
I said Donovan.
Not oh, that question.
Oh, right.
Sorry. Wait, which question?
The macro question that micro question.
Who do I think
is
going to win the West?
Yes.
I mean, I think it's going to be the Lakers.
Okay.
I don't like that I think that.
Woo.
I'm not here to like.
There's only one correct
answer. You heard it here first.
Say what? Like, if we're dreamcasting a finals, that's not who I would pick.
That's what I do.
Who would you pick if you were dreamcasting? Who would you prefer?
I would put the Celtics coming out of the East, which I think, like, I don't think it's out of the question.
Yeah, it's not impossible. It's not likely. It's not impossible.
And I think, like, so I would obviously want the Celtics coming out of the East. I still think they can make a pretty deep run this year. I don't think, other than the Nets, who I think will, like, I think they could look great most of the time, but, like, I think have the potential to, you know, have, like, a series where they just can't stop anyone.
Yeah.
And that ends up, like, I really think it's like, well, what is the answer for, no team has an answer for Joel Embiid, but the Nets, who, like, traded away their best center and don't play a lot of defense, it's like, well, what do you
do? Well, they just got Blake Griffin. Not to say that he's not totally washed, because he might be totally washed.
Yeah,
but
we're going
to
see.
I don't know. I would love, I mean, again, I would love a Blake Griffin renaissance, but just not on this team.
That's fair.
For me, the Sixers are the dream cast, because I think when they lost that series to Toronto, like, I've told you this before, Claire, like, a piece of my heart,
that, like, bounce died. Is the bounce that was heard around the world. Oh my God. Yep.
And I've wanted the best for them since then. And but I never thought it would really happen, because it was always like Ben Simmons and, you know, Joel can't play together, blah, blah, blah. Also, two other people I really want to win on the Sixers are Dwight Howard, just because he tweeted,
ooh,
Laker Nation,
fascinating.
Laker Nation, I'm here with you forever, and then got traded the same day.
Immediately.
Yeah, that's great. That's very funny.
The secondhand, like, embarrassment. Oh my God.
That's so funny.
You know, and getting to see him in the finals against the Lakers would be, you know, pretty rich. And then, of course, Doc has to, you know, rebuild his good name. So
I look, I'm rooting for Doc. That's
yeah.
You know, that's in my bones as well. I feel like I have to believe he's an excellent coach because of 2008.
Right.
So when he won with the Celtics.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, I agree. I think they would be, other than my heart's rooting interest, I would like to see them, just because I think, like, they have players that I like to watch play basketball. And,
yeah.
In a way, and I don't, I feel like Joel Embiid playing at this level is, like, less villainous and more exhilarating than he has been in the past years, because like, in the past years he like, great trash talker, all-time trash talker, but just, like, had not taken the team far enough to back it up, and now I'm like, I think this year he has the potential to, like, to live up to the, like, promos he's been cutting on the NBA for, like, 4 years.
Also, all-time Twitter account, excellent,
great Twitter account.
He's I've never seen Joel Embiid's tweets.
Oh my God, they're so good. They're hilarious.
Tweeting very thirstily at Rihanna, right? Several times over the years.
Josh, so then is your dream cast from the West the Jazz? Is that the, what I inferred?
No, not the Jazz. I would like to see the Clippers or the...
How dare you?
Or the, the Nuggets.
The Nuggets would be... Yeah. Like, I would be happy for them, but it just would, like... It would make no sense. Because I feel like if they were going to do it, I feel like last year was the year they were going to do it. Like, yeah, I think they got worse this year by a decent margin.
Yeah. That could be true. But I think this year is so weird. Like, you were talking about Celtics, like, disappointing first half of the season, which I agree with. But it's also, like, a lot of the disappointment was, like, well, the season started right away. Kemba Walker is coming back from this knee injury, not playing back-to-backs. Jason Tatum had COVID, was out for 2 weeks, and then, like, a month after that was like, oh yeah, I still have, like, COVID shortness of breath. Like, I'm not.
People don't talk about that enough. There really are, like, after effects, and it does affect you.
Yeah.
And so the big picture thing about that is, like, not only, like, am I rooting for a player who I cheer for night to night to be healthy, but, like, it's really scary. Like, some of this stuff could be really bad. And it's, so it's like so dubious that, you know, that they had all this success with the bubble and now they're just like, well, if he dies, he dies, is, like, Adam Silver's,
literally, you know, that's an exaggeration.
It's really scary to see how many players have, like, just gone out. And I know some of it, like Embiid and Simmons not playing in the All-Star game because of contact tracing. That's a good sign, ostensibly, because it's like, well, let's keep everybody as safe as possible. But it's also a sign that, like, people are in unstable situations just by definition.
And it's so performative, right? It's like... It's like, oh, like, we got to keep them out of the All-Star game. But then it's like, you know, at the same time at all these press conferences, the second someone gets COVID on the team, they're already asking when they're going to come back. You know what I mean? It's like you clearly don't give one single fuck about these players' well-being at all. It's not like, it's, how are they doing? Are they okay? It's like, it's like, are they going to be available against the Nuggets on Friday? You know what I mean?
Yeah. it's scary. Like, I think people, like, you've seen, just like, I'm sure both of you in your real life have seen, like, this really affect people in, like, really scary ways. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, she recovered. She's back to texting me every 30 seconds, so
sounds like my
but
mom.
Yeah, it's like, it's such a scary time. So, like, I think that the injury, like, all this kind of stuff, just how weird the season has been, people playing or not playing back to backs, which obviously isn't in play in the playoffs, but, like, just, like, the specter of illness and the trade deadline seeming, like, especially volatile this year.
Yeah.
When, you know, usually there's, like, a lot of talk and then kind of a fizzle. I think, like, there are a bunch of teams that are legitimately, like, Philly getting Kyle Lowry, which has been buzzed about for the last couple weeks, would be, like, a game changer. Or the Clippers getting Kyle Lowry, honestly. Like, someone steady who, like, has like, really grown into a player who, like, thrives in big moments and wants to be the villain to other teams. Again,
I love Kyle
Lowry. Watching my team play against Kyle Lowry, cannot deny that he's, like, an excellent performer.
I love Kyle Lowry, because of him as a basketball player, B, because he has the best smile and, like, you know, is, like, the most lovable in, like, off the court, and C, because he has the best ass I've ever seen on a human man.
I was thinking it the whole time. In fact, every time you say his name,
I'm, I know, like, Josh, you can't really comment on that necessarily because you have a real job, but you can comment on it. Yeah, please do.
Why would I not be able to comment on a butt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agreed. And I love watching some people online. I wish I could give credit, but, like, it's like, I think it's a weird Celtics Twitter thing where, like, in the playoffs last year, talking about the Marcus Smart, Kyle Lowry grift off to, like, draw offensive fouls. And it's like, that is, like, a really fun, it's like a fun way to get furious.
Yeah. The fouls thing is a little out of control. I will say, like, they do need to sort of, like, do something to rein that in, because it does feel like at this point it's become a play, essentially, you know. The purpose of a foul originally was to, like, protect the players, right? Like, that's the point. It's like, you don't want people to get hurt, so you got to try and protect other people from hurting them to get to what they want, which is points. But now it's become like, you can either take a 2-point shot or a 3-point shot, or you can get fouled, you know what I mean? And, like, that's like, the it's become so integral as a way that people score that they're just like, and it's easier in some moments than it is to make a basket. So it's like, it's become something that people hunt to such a degree that that's not really good television. It's not, like, good to watch, you know, people just try and hunt fouls. So that is, a thing that they should figure out.
I want to give credit where credit's due. I think Woz from The Athletic.
Yeah. Right, shout out Woz.
Said this on, I forget whether it was Chris Ryan's podcast, but he was like, or group chat or something, one of the Ringer podcasts, he was like, I don't care if they get it right all the time. Like, for him, like, replay is a thing. And that, like, I never thought of it that way before, because I do like accuracy, but I do think that, like, the like, moment to moment replays, like, in the last 2-minute, like, ref discretion replay is, like, it's makes exhausting. Games, like, real sloggy.
Yeah.
You said a while ago, like, specter of illness.
Yeah.
And since you've said that, I literally wrote this entire James Bond movie in my head called Spectre of Illness.
Spectre of Illness.
Where he's just trying to avoid a head cold the entire time. Mm-hmm. I'd watch it.
He's got, like, cufflinks full of emergency and stuff.
You get it. But that's actually a perfect segue, because we wanted to move on to some non-basketball topics. I wanted to talk about how you got into TV writing, because you're Last Week Tonight, a lot of great credits. So tell us about it.
Sure. So I had been doing stand-up for a long time, and to varying degrees of success and failure. And I had moved to New York. So I started in Boston. I started doing stand-up around New England, then kind of had some success at, like, comedy festivals around the country that got me on the road a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And in 2011, I was like, you know what? I felt like I was at a crossroads. I was teaching preschool, and I thought, like, I've kind of hit the ceiling of where I'm going to get as a comedian if I live in Boston and, like, teach full-time and, like, write and do stand-up on the margins. Yeah. So I moved to New York City, kept this kind of tutoring side gig that I had, and then just started, like, writing for, like, pitching stuff to magazines and doing, like, that kind of freelance writing. And then the thing that really got me, this is, like, such a silly, dated thing, but the thing that got me in the mix for to apply for TV writing jobs was I co-founded and co-created and co-wrote this parody Twitter account with my friend Jacqueline Moore, and it was the modern Seinfeld at Seinfeld Today Twitter account, and that kind of, like,
oh, was I the remember first that. Thing. Oh,
yeah.
That was you?
Yeah. Amazing. That was, yeah, that was me and Jacqueline in, like, late 2012. And that was, like, the first thing that people were like, oh, you're the guy from this thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's you, like you said, that's you. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And so that, like, kind of got me in the mix to apply for, I'd had scattered opportunities to write, apply for TV writing jobs. And then this one, this thing kind of popped, and I spent most of 2013 between tutoring, stand-up, freelance writing, doing, like, 19 submission packets for late night shows, which are, like, you know, usually it's like a couple days worth of work on spec to, like, create a unique distinct submission for each show. Mm-hmm. In the late night world is how they do it, more or less. And so I did a ton of those and got hired in early 2014 to run the social and digital stuff for Last Week Tonight. Even I applied as a writer. They kind of said, like, you're ninth on our list of eight people. Would you want to try this other job? And so I took that job and then moved over to be a staff writer in 2015.
Amazing.
So I was a staff writer there for 4 years and then moved over as a writer producer for Jesus and Marrow at the end of 2018 and was there, like, as the Showtime show was ramping up, and have been there since then. So this is season three now that
Yay.
I've been there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, fuck the haters who say that Twitter is a waste of time, because look at that. Uh-huh. It got you your actual career.
Mm-hmm. Seriously.
And second
yeah,
of all...
Yeah, I mean, I'm very grateful to... That's where I, like, first encountered my now wife was on Twitter. Yeah, even though we didn't, like, plan to go out from Twitter, but, like, we knew of each other from Twitter and then met in person, having, like, been like, oh, you're that person, cool.
Amazing.
And we already knew a little of each other.
I was gonna ask you anyway about Marius, because you guys are a Twitter power couple. You're one half of one of the most esteemed power couples on Twitter. So I was gonna ask you, first of all, what's it like to be with someone who's, like, such a, you know, equal? I mean, obviously, like, some people, you're only ever going to date people who are, like, equals to you in that way. But I feel like it's crazy. She's, like, very much, like, your counterpart in that way. So, like, kind of what's it like? Is it motivating to be with someone who's also just totally killing it in their own lane? And, like,
I mean, it's great. I just, like, love to cheer for her and, like, support her and be there for her. And so it's less, like, to motivate me and more just, like, it is, I just, love and admire her so much, and so it's just I want to show up for her.
So wholesome. Wait, no, Josh, will you tell the story? What was the story you told me years ago about, I think it was, like, your first date? Is that the story?
Oh, well, so
when you first realized you're in love, or there's some story you told me that was, like, so beautiful. Okay, yeah, please regale it.
It's just this old, I've told it as stand-up before, so I'm gonna try to, like, tell it like a person and not, like, lapse into stand-up jokes. But, like, basically this, I've been, when, you know, whenever someone asks, like, how did you know she's the right person? She came, my grandmother died and she did it. No, that's not the stand-up joke. That's just me uncomfortable with sincerity. My grandmother passed away and we'd been dating for, like, 9 months, and Maris and I, not me and my grandmother, and
right.
She came home for the funeral. No, these are just, like,
you're just funny.
With
okay,
sincerity.
Yeah, go for it.
She came back for the funeral, and we were driving around that night. I, like, had a bunch of shows that I didn't cancel because I was like, I don't want to just, like, sit and stagnate. So I had these shows booked in Boston already.
Yeah,
and we were driving around. She came with me, and we kept hearing. The same night, we kept hearing the song Caress Me Down by Sublime on the radio, which is bizarre. Yeah. This was 20, 14. And so we get home. It's like 1 a.m. I had 3 shows. I like kind of like lost my temper on the last one with an audience member who was like drunk at this like all night charity marathon.
Because you're emotional. Yeah, that makes sense.
I was like on tilt. I like was very mean to him. And I was like, we drove home. I was like so exhausted. And we get into bed. And Maris says to me, we're like about to fall asleep and we're spooning. And she says, Josh, kiss my neck. And so I lean in and I'm about to kiss the back of her neck. And she like kind of turns backwards to face me. And she goes, and tickle me fancy, which is the sublime lyric from the song Caress Me Down. And it's like truly.
You're
like,
yeah, you're the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of the hardest times I've ever laughed in my whole life. It was really, really great. She's like, yeah, so funny and so lovely and
that's
smart.
Amazing.
And, yeah. That's amazing. I think I actually saw you all interacting on Twitter about your like Air Force One candle.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
That's
she,
amazing.
She posted something about it. Yeah, very funny.
What an incredible artifact. Yeah.
I really love it. I saw a friend of mine tag me. My friend Jessica Valenti tagged me in this, like, under this post of these Nike, this designer in LA designed these candles. I don't know how to say the name of their design collective, but there was like an Air Force One, an SB Dunk, a Nike, a Cortez, and a Jordan 1. Mm-hmm. And she was like, Josh, are you gonna buy these? And I was like, yes, immediately
I absolutely like, am.
and Maris teased me because it's very me to want a candle shaped like an Air Force One. I would have got the Jordan too, but it was sold out by the time I got there.
I think now is a great time to move on to the game portion.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
We've gotten to know you a bit. And we have a game. I'm going to reiterate, as I do every time, it's a completely original game. It's never been played before. We totally invented it and will never be played again. And it's a pretty simple game. And it's called Defend
That
Tweet. You don't okay. love me hanging, golfer.
I missed the duh. I missed the duh, but I got Defend. Hey.
It's a really simple game. Basically, we just pull up old tweets and you just defend them. That's all it is.
Let's do it.
That's all it is. I'm ready. Got a few tweets here. First one we have is, I don't know much, but I'm totally sure that Taylor Swift will one day get engaged at someone else's birthday party.
I don't feel like that needs defending. I feel like if anything, you have to tell me why I'm wrong.
I guess defend is a broad term, blanket term here, used to it's a little catchier way of saying explain this tweet or like explain what you were thinking.
I just feel like she, I forget when I tweeted this, but I just feel like
2017.
I feel like she has such an incredible knack for like grabbing people's attention and creating a narrative for herself. And I think like some other people, I got a ton of responses that were like engaged at someone else's wedding. And I was like, I don't think so. I think that's like too villainous of her to do, like to like ruin someone else's wedding. Because I do think getting engaged at someone else's birthday party is like pulling focus away from the person who was the focus of the night, but it's not like ruining their big huge day where all their families are
and they'll
there.
Have another birthday the following year, whereas a wedding
is in theory a
once in a lifetime opportunity, probably twice, maybe three times in a lifetime opportunity, but in theory it just happens once.
And if she ruins your first of three weddings, then it's like, well,
is
you
that
still
good
had
luck?
Two that Taylor
if your
said,
first wedding gets ruined, is that good luck technically?
Mm-hmm. And it's a great story. You know, my first wedding, my first marriage ended in divorce, but like I should have known because Taylor Swift got engaged at my wedding.
That was a red flag.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Tolliver, with the next tweet.
Okay. So the problem with 10:30 p.m. is that it comes exactly 1 minute before 2:30 a.m. if you're not careful.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Right through the heart with that one.
Right?
I felt that. I felt that one.
I feel like, especially in the past year, the day is just like in these weird segments where like 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. is like a real gray zone.
Yeah.
Of like, well, I can't go to bed, but also I can't go out.
Yeah.
So like everything is just like, I guess I'll watch all of Seinfeld. and that's what we've been doing here. But like 10:30 PM, it's like that time where like, if you don't go to sleep,
yes.
like if you're, you, then yeah. the night can Speak just get away from you. Cause that is to me, like 10 to 10:30 is like the first time I feel most nights that like I can go to sleep and that I won't like wake up at 6
yeah.
and just be like, we're doing the day. Like, so
I think like, that, but...
yeah, no, for sure. But like, yeah, so that's it. It's mm-hmm. like 10:30 is that point of like, if you start doing something at 10:30, then all of a sudden it's like it's midnight. And then after midnight, it's like, well, yep. why not? Like, I'll just keep looking up old sports highlights on mm-hmm. YouTube mm-hmm. or like listening, just like lying in bed, listening to this, album by an artist that I've missed. I'm like, I've always meant to listen to this.
Yeah. It's so true. It really, I feel like if you don't get into bed around 10:30, you're just up till 2 and there's no in between. Yeah. I've never gone to bed at like midnight. Is that a thing? There's no in between.
The times I go to bed at midnight, like, because yeah, if I'm up at home at midnight and get into bed even, mm-hmm. then it's like, well, I'm not asleep. Cause it's like, I've just been up doing something. Like we've had, obviously not in the last year, but like we've had people over and mm-hmm. like everybody left and it's midnight and I get into bed and I'm still like all kind of a buzz from the party. Mm-hmm. But the only parties. Time I can, go to bed at midnight is if I like am at a job all day and then I'm out like doing stand up at night and I get home late and I just like hit the bed at midnight and I go, you know what, I'm like too exhausted to keep staying up, and I know if I don't go to sleep now my next day is like just brutalized as well.
See, what I do as somebody who both is an insomniac and has anxiety is that I will get distracted and stay up until, you know, 1:30, whatever, mm-hmm. and then get into bed, and then I'll keep myself awake with an hour of guilt that I stayed up so late for no reason. Boy.
Wow.
And then I'm just like, God, you have to be up tomorrow and like be a person. And like, why did you even stay up like finishing the second Avengers movie when you could just have been fucking sleeping? Like, this is so stupid.
I'm pretty good since being, even before being married, since moving in mm-hmm. with Maris, I've been much better because she's so good about going to bed when she's tired. Mm-hmm. I've been much better at like when she gets into bed, occasionally like, I'll be up watching a West Coast basketball game mm-hmm. and that'll take me a little later, or I'll be out doing shows or whatever, like when mm-hmm. when that's allowed. But usually if it's just a regular night and she gets into bed at like 10:30 or 11, I'm not going to like stay up by myself till 1 just in the living room or whatever. So I'll get into bed and like whether I'm listening to, you know, a podcast or whatever, but I do a pretty good job of winding down. The nights that are the worst for me now since I've been married, are like nights when I'm either on the road or at home and I have an early flight because
it's so hard to sleep for an early flight.
I can't. And when all I should be doing is like, okay, if I should go to sleep at 10:30, mm-hmm. wake up at 5:30, that's 7.5 hours of sleep. That's not bad.
Yeah.
But instead, I wake up every half hour. Mm-hmm. Like, is it time?
Is it time to miss my flight? Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Every time.
Exactly.
Every time.
I've only missed one flight ever, and it was 11 years ago.
I've never missed a flight because I overslept, but I've also never gotten a good night's sleep before a morning flight. Somehow those two things are mutually true. Like, I don't know why, but there you have it.
Also done, these are the worst, is like, I'm like a pretty, I try to be really diligent about work stuff and mm-hmm. like not take advantage of having nice bosses. And so I've had a couple, occasionally if I get like an exciting gig out of town, I will take the gig, but then fly home for work the next morning.
Oh, wow.
So like from the first time I did Wait, Don't Tell Me, I did the show, went out after the show. My aunt, who is a big Wait fan, mm-hmm. flew to Chicago to come to the taping, which is really sweet. So sweet. And then we went out with Peter Sagal, the host, and the mm-hmm. other panelists after the show for a drink. And then by the time I got back to the hotel, it was like 11:30, and I had to get up to fly at 5 a.m. so I could be at work. And like, that's, I'm toast. Jesus. Like, because mm-hmm. it's like, okay, if I go to sleep right now, I can sleep for 4 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then
classic.
At like 1:30, I'm just like, oh no, it's over. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to be a waste the next day.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Next tweet. Please. We have, this year, one of my personal favorites. This year, I'm trying to be a more available, supportive friend, as well as an increasingly looming, formidable enemy.
Yes, that has been my New Year's resolution the past 3 years. That is, that's deep in my heart. Those are like my big goals. I think more than any career goals at this point, more than any like other things I want to accomplish in my personal life, mm-hmm. my big every year. All I want to do is get better at being an available and attentive friend that like shows up, that like doesn't miss friends' birthday parties.
You're so good at that, like, Josh. Feeling you're, like a bummer. You're the best at that.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Who like supports friends' art and shows up for them and like is attuned to like when their families are having a hard time. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. oh, my friend's mom is sick. I want to make sure that I check in on that or mm-hmm. like that kind of stuff. And then hand in hand, I want to be better at being shitty to people who are bad. Yes. And that one is more of a challenge. Amen. But I think I can do it. I'm too conciliatory and I'm too much like, oh, hey, good to see you. When I want to be like, no. Yeah.
Man,
I'm really
man.
Trying to, yeah, I'm trying to stay on my Jerry Newman, to get on my Jerry Newman nemesis wavelength
right.
every year.
Ever since the demise of Facebook, the mass exodus, I like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to remember people's birthdays.
It's really hard.
I'm mostly on Facebook for that reason.
I still have a Facebook just to check birthdays and also to use Marketplace. I don't know if you guys have ever used right. Facebook
no.
Marketplace.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it's like better than Craigslist because it's easier. It's like more user friendly. And also, I don't know about more user friendly. It's more pleasant to look through. There's like less spam, I think.
Oh,
and then also I think it's cheaper a lot of times because it's not people professionally selling things on Craigslist.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. like just people who are like, I need to get rid of this thing. So I've bought a lot of furniture on Facebook recently.
Yeah. I've been, my big use of Facebook the last week has been, I don't want to say the name of it because it's a private group, but there is a large, like several thousand person private group of, it's all reviews of roast beef sandwiches.
Oh my
and,
God.
Which is like a very specific, like obviously there's roast beef sandwiches everywhere. But there's like a specific strain of like New England, like especially North Shore, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. roast beef establishment. And a lot of them are like roast beef and seafood, like roast beef and fried clams and stuff. Like Kelly's roast beef is kind of the like popular chain, but there's all these independent ones. And so I've just been reading roast beef sandwich reviews. They're like incredibly aggressive.
Oh my God.
Like full of curse words and threats to other members of the group.
Oh.
And I'm like obsessed with it. And that I'm like so glad that I'm on Facebook to be a part of this group. I haven't posted anything because like that you're only allowed to post reviews and then
what happens in
reviews.
Roast beef club stays at
yeah.
roast beef club.
It's very much
the
like that. Yeah.
Just weirdo groups like that. Okay. Wait, Tolliver, do you have the next tweet?
I sure do. Okay. So every time someone says they regret to inform you, they're definitely actually bordering on horny to inform you.
That's so true. That's
yeah.
so smoldering. Fucking true.
Yeah, I think so. I forget. When was it? When did I even tweet that?
I can tell you exactly when because I have it in a screenshot.
November 2019.
November 4th, 2019. Yep.
I just feel like it was like some... I must have gotten like some email, like a... just like something of like we regret to inform you you weren't selected
yeah,
for this
exactly.
sneaker
like,
draw
you don't regret
or like,
it.
Yeah
yeah she don't regret
you
it at
love
all.
This you designed the system for this to happen. You have no regrets. I feel that way too. I mean like obviously like we regret to inform you that your grandfather has passed away. I'm sure they like
they're
regret
not horny
that.
For that necessarily.
Yeah not horny for dead grandfathers but like anything else like any kind of like that I think that's what it was like some customer service experience mm-hmm. of like we regret to inform you we're sold out of the thing you ordered and it's like that's what you want to be sold out.
Yeah
that,
exactly
so, yeah
yep. Oh man. Okay, the next tweet is near and dear to my heart because this is my a personal fave of mine. Are Cape Cod potato chips the best potato chips or am I just from Massachusetts? Spoiler alert, mm-hmm. they're the best. I think
oh wow okay
they're the best.
I love a Cape Cod potato
they're
chip.
So fucking good dude
yeah
they're so good. They're so good.
They're the right crunch. And like, there's so many. My favorite kind of potato chip are the kind that are all folded up in a little like pocket of potato chip.
Sure.
And there's so many of those in there.
Oh, yeah. So good. Yes. I love that. I love the crunchier, the better. Yeah. Ideally, it would be like a struggle to get through a potato chip.
It should cause you pain. If the potato chip doesn't cause you pain, it's not kettle-y enough for me.
Right. It should be a toss-up of who's coming out of this alive, the chip or my teeth.
Absolutely.
And Cape Cod is like on in
it's
that
right
zone.
On the precipice. It's perfect.
I've been eating in the pandemic times because of just like only going to this one bodega really that has a lot of like kettle brand chips. Mm-hmm. I've been trying all those flavors and those are pretty good.
Honestly. No, that brand kettle chips are little bitch potato chips. I am pointing at the screen. They're little bitch potato chips because they call themselves kettle, but they disintegrate in your mouth with such great ease. And as we previously mentioned, I want a chip that will hold its own. I want a chip that's going to put up a fight against my teeth.
A chip that borderline doesn't want to be eaten.
Exactly.
That's like where,
kettle chips are too cooperative. Like, no.
They are pretty, they're pretty pliable.
Good flavors, though. The flavor.
They do have good flavors. Yeah. Yeah. Cape Cod has, they're pretty, like, traditional in their flavors.
Right.
And I would like to see them
branch out a little bit.
Branch out a little bit more. But it's also very Cape Cod just to be like entrenched.
Nope,
in
we just got salt
tradition.
And low salt, and that's all you get. Like,
yeah, dude, we've got barbecue, we got sour cream and onion. Oh, what do you want? Buffalo?
Do they
buffalo
make,
flavored
do they make
chips?
Sour cream and onion and barbecue.
They do.
Brand
they
Cape
do.
Cod?
I think they go. They do have the low salt and the regular, and then they go. I think they have barbecue, salt and vinegar, sour cream and onion.
That is a game changer for me because I've never seen flavored Cape Cod chips, I don't think.
They might not even distribute them outside of Massachusetts.
I need to go make a pilgrimage to my you know, mecca of chip, apparently.
You got it.
I'm a sucker for anything that's like New Orleans, marketed like Creole New Orleans kind of thing.
That's my favorite.
Like Zaps.
You know where I was going
Zaps
with this.
Voodoo chips are the goat potato chip in the non-kettle category. Like to me, there's if you're having a potato chip, this is getting really deep now, but I have a deep passion for chips, obviously, that I don't even think I knew I had until I started talking about them. But you've got kettle chips, which Cape Cod or the goat, as we discussed, they're aggressive, they're crunchy as fuck, and they're perfect. Then in the other category of chips where I put like all other potato chips that aren't even masquerading as kettle, they're not trying to be too crunchy, whatever. Yes. Zaps Voodoo chips are chef's kiss. They
really
taste like
good.
It's an indescribable taste. They're like kind of sweet. They're kind of tangy. They're salty. They're so good.
Yeah. I used to walk 4 blocks to a gas station and then 4 blocks back. That's a mile just for those Voodoo chips.
Great chips.
They're so good.
A really great chip.
You know, it's a life hack if you're ever in Canada. In Canada, they have a type of potato chip called All Dressed.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Same flavor.
Wow.
Same flavor. I didn't realize it was the same.
Wow.
Yeah. More you know. Come to me for all your potato chip questions.
All your potato chip questions.
I do.
And yeah, I
we deserve All Dressed chips in the United States.
We deserve.
That's when people are like, American capitalism, it gives you the most choice and the most opportunity. And it's like, well, if we don't even have all the best potato chip flavors, this whole system is a sham.
They have so many. You know where they have the weirdest potato chip flavors I've ever seen? In fucking Britain, in London.
Really?
Yeah.
They have weird, like it's like gravy and like just
beans.
Weird, like shrimp.
Bean flavored
beans. Chips. They do. They have bean flavored ones,
Not
think.
Not shocked.
And none of them were like enticing. Like one of my bandmates, I think, bought a bag of every different flavor when we were on tour there because he's just that person that's like, when you're traveling, you just have to try the weirdest thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm like.
I feel that. But when I'm on tour, I'm also like, my body is already so devastated by the like random shit that I have to eat to survive that I don't really want to like roll the dice on shrimp potato chips necessarily. I want to like, I'm like so horny for a salad when I'm on tour. Like, that's all I want, especially in Europe where they fucking hate raw lettuce for some reason. I don't know. It's really hard to find a salad in Europe.
I go back and forth because, like, to me, the ideal road meal, like when you're at like a hotel restaurant, right? Like you get to a new city, you don't have time to go anywhere. You just like want to pop down to the hotel bar and eat is like a buffalo chicken salad where you get a little salad, you get a little chicken. It's like you go like a You don't dress it too heavily. Hopefully there's not too much like cheese, but like a good buffalo chicken salad is like the best of both worlds for me.
Yes,
where it's like a little indulgent, but also not off the charts.
Exactly.
But I can also so easily be tricked. Like if I'm, you know, oh, I'm in Atlanta for 3 days and then I'm like, oh, let's go. Like I'll talk to the other comics on the show and I'll be like, hey, let's grab lunch tomorrow. And they'll be like, great. There's this place in town. It's called the Gravy Syringe, where they shoot gravy into your heart. Like that scene in Pulp Fiction where they bring Uma Thurman back to life. And I'll be like, well, I should try it. Like, you're, it's a cultural experience.
You're here. You're there.
When
I'm
in here, gravy?
When am I going to get that chance again? And I'm like so easily enticed into doing that anywhere. Yeah.
But then you have to deal with the repercussions of that while you're traveling. And that sure do. Sucks.
You know, it's horrible, especially when it's like one day in a city. That's like the roughest one because it's like, oh, we're going out after a show. We're going to Tim's Cheese Curdery and we're going to eat cheese curds dipped in molten cheese. And it's like, all right, well, I'm going to wake up in 4 hours, like hungover, just like cheese coming out of my forehead.
Yeah,
like my pores are going to be like a Play-Doh fun factory for cheese.
And you have to reckon with yourself and look in the mirror and say, I made this choice.
I made this decision because I pretended that I would never be back in this city again and have another chance to eat like a cheddar and garlic biscuit from this one place that's open till 2 a.m.
Oh my God.
Amazing. I got to say though, the gravy syringe, I was like, tell me more.
You're with it?
I would try it.
The gravy syringe.
I love that. And it's like, that's where it is. Like, I've done that. Atlanta is, I picked that because it's like every time I'm there, someone's like, well, you got to go to this place for barbecue. Then you got to go to this place for the biscuits and gravy. Then you've got to get like a burger at the place that you're performing. And it's like, yeah, all right. And then I'm going to get a stent on my last day in my heart.
Oh, man. Okay, Tolliver, you have our next tweet?
Yes. Okay.
Incredible.
I accidentally signed up for Disney Minus, and it's just the scenes where animated characters watch their parents die.
I stand by that joke. I like it. And that was when Disney Plus was launching, and it was like, all these services, right? I feel like when Disney Plus launched, people were like, how often do I have to watch The Lion King? And now, like, The Mandalorian is up for every award. And we're like, all right, Disney, you got us again.
Yeah, man. I mean, so what happened to me with Disney Plus, it's funny. First of all, incredible joke. Second of all, what happened to me was that movie Soul came out.
Right.
And I really wanted to watch it. And it's like, you know, we're knee deep in quarantine at this time. So there's like really not much else to do besides watch whatever one movie everyone's talking about that week.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I got Disney Plus, and they don't do a free trial or anything. Bastards. You just have to get it or not get it. They're like, fuck you, poor bitch. Like, just pay for it. Pay the $8. So then I'm like, of course, you know, I'm like, I need to get my $8 worth. So let me see what else is on here. And I had never watched any of the Marvel movies. Like, I missed that train, I guess. Mm-hmm. And because I had Disney Plus, I was like, now seems like a good time to like catch up on pop culture. And now I've made my bed and I'm lying in it. And I'm like 10 movies into infinite number of movies. I mean, there's no end to these movies, but I feel I'm only up to like 2011 or something in this binge.
Oof.
So I'm like, well, now I have to finish it because it's like, I might as well catch up to what everyone's talking about now. Right. Mm-hmm. And here we are.
I've fully embraced just like being old and out of touch. And so there's like, I feel so little shame about just like watching a trend sail by me.
I generally like, feel that way. Yeah.
Where people are like, gosh, you've got to watch WandaVision. And it's like, well, how many other Marvel movies should I watch first? And they're like, well, probably like 15 or 16. And then just like, hard pass, diamond hard pass.
Yeah. I missed Game of Thrones. I missed the whole thing. I don't feel any regrets about it. Yeah. I feel completely at peace with that.
Yep. There were a couple of those.
Yeah.
There's the most spiteful payoff you can experience is like not watching a TV series that falls off in the last season.
And then not having to go through that pain when everyone else
I had
is
the
going
same thing
it.
With Lost.
Oh, yeah.
Where like all my roommates watched Lost.
I watched it,
And then the last season they were just like, this is it. and that's how I felt with Game of Thrones too. People were like, they were like, oh, can't wait to see how this wraps up. And then at the end, they're like, I guess it doesn't wrap up.
Yeah. The only time I've been like totally wronged in that way by a TV show that I was truly invested in was Gilmore Girls. The last season of Gilmore Girls, season 7, is truly some of the worst television that's ever been made. And I would argue that the earlier seasons of Gilmore Girls on the other side of the spectrum are some of the best television that's ever been made. And I suffered through that pain, and I don't ever care to suffer through it again.
It's tough. Yeah. I'm trying to think of one that I like played out till the end, even though it fell apart. I don't know. Because I'm not a big prestige drama person. That hurts. That hurts. Look, hey, dude, if Haywood had been healthy, they would have had it all. He would have locked up Jimmy Butler in the playoffs. We all know it. Like, just too much wing depth. It's also like that one series, like Tyler Hero was like, oh, I'm Steph Curry. And now right. This season,
and Duncan Robinson,
he's on my fantasy team and has not been an asset.
No, not at all. I think it's incredible that you're so good at doing that Boston accent, but your accent doesn't have a trace of Boston anywhere in it.
It comes out. There are certain words that it comes out in ways that I like forget. Like when I say Florida, which is like
Florida,
like with an A. Yeah. And so it comes out in little ways because like I went to school in Massachusetts, but like for college, but I kind of it was scrubbed out of me pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And like there are certain words like that I will use occasionally that I like forget are regional. Yeah. Like a water fountain is a bubbler or a bubbla.
Oh my God. And, that's so New England.
Which is New England and like Milwaukee is the other place they say it. And I don't know why.
Interesting.
And And so I'll say that and people will be like, what are you talking about? Like go back to Goodwill Hunting, you loser.
Oh my God.
But it got like scrubbed out of me pretty quick. But like when I'm in traffic or watching sports, it'll come out. Like it just comes out as like, are you shitting me, guy? Like, just like whenever I have that
feeling.
I can't
picture you having road rage. It's like really hard to picture.
I just get like, it's not rage. It's just like road townie, like road irritation.
Yeah.
Road rash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the last tweet in the game.
Please.
Signatures are so weird. It's like, okay, you have to believe it's really me because I used cursive. Such a good point. Never thought about this before.
Agreed. I was thinking about it again recently because I had to like e-sign some documents and like sometimes like some things make it easier, right? Where you like some of the Adobe things have like you can like trackpad a signature and that counts as a signature. Yeah. But like when that option doesn't, when I like can't find it or it doesn't appear in whatever version I'm using, I will just put my name in a cursive font and make it a PDF. Yeah. And it's like,
yeah, absolutely.
And no one ever says anything about it.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten
it.
Care.
I've had it kicked back to me a couple times if I just like typed my name and then I just put it in cursive and I'm like, what? Like,
what are you going to do now? It's in cursive.
It's my cursive. Signature legally. Is literally just a J because my name is Jonathan Tolliver. It's a J and then nothing. It's just anyone could. Yeah. Be that.
Yeah.
Mine is similar. It's like C. It's just like a big C and then just like scribbles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be revealing this probably.
But it's like, everyone. What? Who sees, like, what are they comparing it to?
Nothing.
Right. Like, and also, all the places where my signature is official are like the worst examples of my signature. Right. Whether it's like my
because you're at
my
the DMV driver's license. You just want to go home.
Right. Yes, right. Right. A DMV trackpad signature is not what my signature looks like.
Right.
Nor is writing with a Sharpie on the back of a credit card.
Right.
It's like all my official signatures are like weird slippery versions of it. So like it's just like, oh, cursive? That's like how is that even more distinctive than like my regular weird bad handwriting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what the signature thing is? The signature thing is the same as TSA at the airport.
Oh my God.
It serves absolutely no purpose but to make you have a semblance of safety in your mind. Yep. But it actually does nothing.
Good call.
Absolutely.
The what was I gonna say? A bunch of people, this is another one that was like a joke, but people like in the comments were like, actually, and it's like, you don't understand. I'm not interested in learning right now.
That's Twitter in a nutshell. It's like you make a joke and then people say, actually, and then you say, oh, no, I didn't come here to learn.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, there are times I try to be like very open. Like if I say something that is like misguided, and mm-hmm. people are like, oh, the reason that's wrong is like this thing that you hadn't considered. And I'm like, oh, thanks. Like, I don't want to be like,
you're a better man than
saying, I don't want to be saying like fucked up things that like are hurtful to people that I, you know, if it's like, oh, what's this dumb thing? And someone's like, oh, actually this is really important for people with disabilities. And I'm like, you're like, oh, right on. The, hey, yeah, yeah. Hey, my bad.
Yeah.
But if it's like, I, the one that like really got me is like 6 months ago, I tweeted that teaspoon and tablespoon have two similar abbreviations. Yes. And people for days were like, one's a capital T, one's a lowercase t. And it's like, I know what the difference is.
I'm saying the joke.
They're similar. Yeah, like it's like absolutely. I try to take things in good faith, but like by the 50th person who's like, oh, so you can't tell the difference between a T and a T? I'm like,
that voice is exactly what they sound like in my head too.
Why do you think that? Like, again, like you said, Tolliver, I know that. That's the point. The point is that I know the difference.
Yes.
And I'm mad at it.
I love that voice, the voice of Twitter trolls is like Hulk Hogan in the 90s, because that's exactly how I picture them as
absolutely.
Well. Like, why don't you understand? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, brother.
Like, exactly. Yeah. It's so good. Okay. Horrible. Well, just a quick opportunity. Where can people find you and your work and your book? And where can they find you?
I am at Josh Gondelman on Twitter and Instagram. My podcast is Make My Day. It comes out every Tuesday. It's a comedy game show where there's one guest per week, basically. And so there's only one contestant and they always win. And they win a $100 donation to the charity of their choice. My book, you can find wherever there's books. It's called Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results. All this stuff is like housed at my website. There will be tour dates there when touring happens again.
Yeah.
And And watch Desus and Mero on Showtime at 11 o'clock on Sundays and Thursdays.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much for joining us. That was an amazing time. I literally cried laughing.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Oh my God. Amazing. Well, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We're taping on a Sunday.
Thank you. You too.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.